Your Honor, at this point, plaintiffs called Dr. Lori Byron to the stand.
And Your Honor, Mr. Gregory was kind enough to inform me that he has given the witness notes to refresh her recollection, and would like to object to that. I think she has to try to testify independently of her knowledge before she can refresh her recollection with her notes. And so I would rather her not bring notes up to the stand.
Do you like to look at them?
I hear they are.
So you've got them?
I do.
I'm going to let her take them up to the stand.
Right. So, doctor, just let us know if you're needing to refer to your notes, please. Jog your memory.
Okay.
When you're answering your questions, fine. Okay.
And Your Honor, for purposes of Dr. Byron's testimony, we're going to be referring to several exhibits, and I've provided counsel with the list and the Bates numbers. But the exhibits are Dr. Byron's CV, Dr. Byron's citation. I'm sorry, Your Honor, the CV is P189. Dr. Byron's references cited in her original expert report, Exhibit 304. The references cited in Dr. Byron's rebuttal report, Exhibit 307. Then Exhibit 14, Exhibit 31, Exhibit 44, Exhibit 45, Exhibit 116, and Exhibit 141. May I proceed, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. Please state your name.
Lori Byron.
Can you please spell your name?
L-O-R-I-R-O-N.
Where do you live?
Crow Agency, Montana.
Have you been asked by the plaintiffs here to serve as an expert on certain topics?
Yes, Dr. Rob Byron and I were retained by an expert opinion regarding the physical health and mental health of these kids and whether or not climate change was affecting it, with a likelihood that things would worsen in the future for them.
And were you also to provide rebuttal opinions?
Yes, Dr. Rob Byron and I provided rebuttal opinion to Drs. Judith Curry and Terry Anderson.
Dr. Byron, are you leaving the country later this week?
I am. Dr. Kathy Whitlock and Dr. Byron and myself will be leaving to Mongolia to teach a course in climate change and human health.
And so, to the extent there's testimony from Drs. Curry or Anderson concerning the areas covered by your rebuttal report, you'll not be available to rebut them in court. Is that correct?
Sadly, that's correct.
And to make things clear, Dr. Rob Byron, who's that?
That's my husband.
Okay. Can you briefly outline the primary areas of your opinions?
Yes, that climate change and the associated air pollution is creating conditions harmful to children's health, and that the health impacts are worsening. And just as it behooves a smoker to quit smoking before they develop lung cancer, it behooves the state of Montana to take an interest in our future, which is our youth, and reduce the fossil fuels and begin climate change mitigation on a serious level.
Your Honor, Exhibit P-189 is a copy of Dr. Byron's CV, and I understand that that's been stipulated to come into evidence.
Yes, Your Honor.
So P-189 is submitted?
Thank you, Your Honor. Briefly, Dr. Byron, can you please provide the court with your educational background?
Yes, from 1976 to 1980, I attended Kentucky Wesleyan College and graduated summa cum laude with a degree, a Bachelor of Arts degree in Religion and Philosophy and a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics. And then attended University of Louisville Medical School from 1980 to 1984 and received a Doctor of Medicine degree in 1984. And then from 1984 to 1987 was at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, for a pediatric internship and residency.
And recently, have you attained any graduate degrees?
Yes, in 2020, I received a Master's of Science degree from Johns Hopkins in Energy Policy and Science, Climate.
Can you briefly describe your professional background?
Yes, beginning when we moved to Montana in 1988, I worked in Crow Agency until 2015 with the Crow and Northern Cheyenne peoples through Indian Health Service, and did a lot of primary care and emergency room work, including taking care of a lot of patients with trauma, including trauma from adverse weather events, and also took care, attended the deliveries and took care of thousands of babies during that time. And then from 2013 on, I've been working night shifts as a pediatric hospitalist at SCL Health in Billings, Montana.
It sounds like your focus has been caring for children and youth.
Yes, I have decades under my belt of doing this, and in particular, cared for a lot of children with adverse childhood experiences and was able to follow them through their entire childhood and sometimes into their adulthood.
Are you board certified?
I am board certified by the American Board of Pediatrics since 1988.
Have you headed any organizations here in Montana?
Yes, I was the president of the Montana chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics from 1996 to 1999.
Have you received any honors and awards?
Yes, in 2000, I received Deaconess Billings Clinic Foundation Medical Achievement Award. In 2005, I received the Kentucky Wesleyan College Alumni Achievement Award. And in the same year, from the American Academy of Pediatrics, received the Native American Child Health Advocacy Award. And then in 2021, received the Unsung Heroes of the Academy from the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Have you given presentations or done any additional work on climate change and health?
Yes, myself or my husband and myself have given over 200 presentations, either locally, nationally, or internationally on climate change and health. I also organize an initiative through the American Academy of Pediatrics where we have advocates for climate in every chapter, every state of the United States who organize activity by the pediatricians on climate and health. And when we get back from Mongolia, we'll be teaching a course on climate and health for Johns Hopkins University.
At the end of the summer?
Middle of the summer.
Do you currently serve on any committees?
Yes, I'm just finishing up a 6-year term with the Children's Health Protection Advisory Committee to the Environmental Protection Agency, and also just a 6-year term on the Executive Committee of the Council on Environmental Health and Climate Change within the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Have you authored any reports?
Yes, I was a co-author on the Climate Change and Human Health, a special report of the Climate Assessment, a special report of the Montana Climate Assessment in 2021, along with several other climate and health publications.
Is this the first time you are testifying in court as an expert?
No, I used to testify on child abuse cases.
Do you believe that your testimony will be helpful in assisting the court understanding the evidence of the case?
I do.
Are you charging these youth plaintiffs for preparing for your testimony here today or for testifying?
No, because of the gravity of the threat to public health that climate change is creating. And Rob and I have never charged or benefited financially from any climate and health work that we've done.
How did you go about formulating your opinions for this case?
By reviewing the medical literature, by the fact that I'm an expert in climate and health. And from my many, many years of medical practice, especially treating kids who've had similar issues, and also by consulting my colleagues, especially ones in Montana, who again have treated a number of children with similar issues.
And if you've relied on the work of Dr. Rob Byron?
I have. Dr. Rob Byron was one of the two lead authors on the Climate Change and Human Health Report for Montana. He's also a current author for the National Climate Assessment 5, and he also has many years of experience as an internal medicine doctor.
Your Honor, we marked as Exhibit 304 the citation references Dr. Byron's original expert report, and as Exhibit 307, the citation references to Dr. Byron's rebuttal report. And my understanding is the parties have stipulated to enter those as evidence.
So stipulated, Your Honor. 304 and
307 are admitted?
Dr. Byron, the documents that we reviewed, were attached both to your original expert report and to your rebuttal report. Are those the documents you considered in forming your opinions?
Yes, it was.
And can you briefly describe for the court the documents that you reviewed?
Yes, there are a number of reports from federal and state agencies, such as the Environmental Protection Agency, the Center for Disease Control, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. There were studies on climate change impacts on children, both globally and in Montana, from the U.S. Global Change Research Center program and the Montana Institute on Ecosystems. There was also a lot of peer-reviewed scientific publications on health and child health and climate change, and also peer-reviewed scientific publications on mitigation of climate change and how to do that as it relates to human health.
So mitigation, a way to curb?
Way to, yeah, decrease, yeah.
Have you reviewed the pleadings in this case?
I have. We reviewed the original complaints from the plaintiffs, and my husband and I spoke with Ricky Held, with Laura King, and with Georgie Fisher. And I reviewed some of the medical records from some of the plaintiffs, but I need to look at my notes to remember which all.
And can you look at your notes?
Is that okay? From medical records of Lander, Nate, Jeffrey, Georgie, and Ruby. And one page from Micah's.
Were you in court yesterday when three of the plaintiffs testified, Ricky, Eva, and Grace?
I was.
And were you in court just now when Badge testified?
Yes.
And in the course of your work on this case, did you diagnose any of the plaintiffs?
I did not diagnose any of them, nor did I create a treatment plan.
In your opinion, in order for you to render your opinions in this case, was a diagnosis or treatment plan necessary?
No, a diagnosis or treatment plan is not necessary to determine that public health, that physical health and mental health of these plaintiffs is being affected by anthropogenic climate change.
So what were the primary data points in that regard that you relied upon?
From their complaints, original complaint, my gestalt being a pediatrician for over 35 years, and the fact that I'm a climate and health expert, and again, consultation with colleagues who see similar patients.
Dr. Byron, were all the opinions expressed in your expert disclosures, such as your expert report and your rebuttal report, based on a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
They were.
And will you please answer my questions today using that same standard?
I will.
Your Honor, at this time, I tender Dr. Lori Byron as an expert in the areas outlined to be covered in her testimony.
Yes, she's an expert.
Dr. Byron, can you generally outline the opinions you intend to offer today?
Yes, that is that the primary premise is that youth are being harmed by climate disproportionately when compared to adults, both due to their physiologic features and their psychological development.
What do you mean by children being disproportionately harmed?
Children are one of the groups that we call vulnerable populations. So the average child is more than the average adult. That also means, though, that the kids with chronic medical problems or disabilities are even more at risk.
How are you defining the term children?
There's no standard definition. I use the age 21.
And that's for, why did you choose age 21 as opposed to 18 or some other age?
So my colleagues and myself continue to follow pediatric patients until they're through college. So 21 looks like a pretty good number.
Is there a standard definition in the medical field for children?
There is not.
Now, from a medical standpoint, are children merely small adults?
They absolutely are not small adults. Their physiology is changing, and their organs are developing at different times.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, the blood clotting system is mature by the time a child is about 10 years of age, but the brain and the lungs aren't mature until into their 20s. So that means that events like adverse climate events like heat and air pollution, they can affect a child differently depending on what developmental stage they're at.
So do children's bodies respond differently than adults to environmental stimuli?
They frequently do.
And what about respiratory rates for children? Are they different than adults?
They are. They're considerably faster. And so that means they're actually, when they're exposed to air pollution, they're breathing in more pollution that's getting both into their lungs, but also into their bodies.
So does that affect children more than adults?
It does.
And what about the effects of heat-related illnesses on children?
That also affects children more. They take longer to acclimatize. They actually sweat less. And they have a higher basal metabolic rate, which means they normally have more heat to get rid of than an adult does even before they're exposed to heat. Also, they spend more time outside, which in hot weather usually means they're more exposed than adults are. And because their brains are less mature, sometimes they ignore the signs of impending heat illnesses, and sometimes they might just choose to ignore them because they're having too much fun.
So is there a medical significance to a child's dependence on adults?
There is, and in fact, that's one of the reasons they're considered a vulnerable population. So throughout their childhood, kids are dependent on parents and guardians, on school teachers, on counselors, and on their government.
Would these children also be, why would they be dependent on government officials?
Well, if you think about it, if they do something that their parents don't like, they can have their cell phones taken away, and that's a pretty big deal. If they do something not well in school, their teachers can give them bad grades. And if they do something not too great at camp, they can get sent home. And the government has the power to work on climate change or not for their health and safety.
So, Dr. Byron, can you please analyze the differences between children and adults?
Yes, so they have a higher basal metabolic rate, and that makes it harder for them to get rid of heat in their bodies when they're in heat events. They have a higher respiratory rate, so that allows more polluted air to enter. Their lungs are still developing, so the respiratory system may be more susceptible to environmentally induced illnesses and exposures. Their system's immature before the age of 2. They also require more calories and water per unit body weight than what the adults do. And they have an immature central nervous system, so they're more susceptible to neurotoxicants, and they're also sometimes less able to make appropriate decisions.
Now, how do the differences between children and adults apply to the plaintiffs in this case?
Well, when the case was filed, they were all under 21 years of age, and most of them still are. So that means they are more vulnerable to the effects of anthropogenic climate change.
Do you have any opinion on whether anthropogenic climate change harms children's health, specifically in Montana.
Yes, children's health is already being harmed, including the health of these plaintiffs.
Dr. Byron, I'd like to show you a chart. It's part of Exhibit P116 from Pereira, Climate Change, Fossil Fuel Pollution, and Children's Health. Is that the report that contains the figure we're looking at now? And did you review this report in forming your opinions in this case?
Yes.
Do you consider this report to be reputable?
Yes, it's in a peer-reviewed journal.
Your Honor, I'd like to move into Evidence Exhibit P116.
Your Honor, I would.
That document, that or the whole report, what are you talking about?
Well, Your Honor, I'm happy to put in the whole, I'd like to put in the whole report because she relied on it, but I'd also particularly move this document in to discuss it with the witness.
I don't object to this one document that's in front of the screen. I think that's appropriate, and I think she's laid a foundation for that. But the entire study, I do object as hearsay.
All right. 116 is admitted to that page.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And I cannot read that. If it's
we'll work on this. We've got different slides, Your Honor. We'll figure it out. So
there's a lot in and out too early.
We're gonna fix that.
He's made it bigger. But I also have one behind me, which I never look at. So,
Dr. Byron, this figure on climate-related harms to children's health starts at the top, exposure pathways. Can you explain what's being depicted here?
Yes, but we have to step back a step or two. First of all, we have the increased carbon dioxide in our atmosphere that our scientists have attested to over the last 2 days, and that leads to rising temperatures, to sea level rise, and to extreme weather events. And those then create exposure pathways that affect the health of children. So some of the exposure pathways are shown here, including extreme weather events, exposures to heat stress, to changes in worsening of air quality, to changes in water quantity and quality, to food supply and safety, to vector distribution and ecology, and to social factors.
Now, in the original figure, these exposure pathways at the top, because the type is pretty small, we're going to go down to the next part of the figure. And it talks about susceptibility factors. Do you see that?
Yes.
And when it talks about susceptibility factors, can you explain susceptibility factors?
Yeah, they are things that make the fetus, infant, and child more susceptible to those exposure pathways that we just saw on the previous slide. So some of the things on this slide that are examples of that, on the left, it has biologic factors, which is the fact that organs are still developing, that they have greater fluid and nutritional requirements. They are poorer at thermoregulation and getting rid of heat. They have more permeable skin and blood-brain barrier, so things get through easier than it does in adults. And they also have less effective nasal filtration, which, again, affects air pollution.
So what you've just described here, again, because the type is small, what you've just described here are susceptibility factors. And on the left side of the slide, the factors that increase exposure. Is that correct?
Yes. Badge and me have the same problem today. That was on the right side.
Okay. So those were the biologic factors. What about the factors that increase exposure?
Right. So we have a longer exposure because they're going to be living in this non-pristine environment longer than the rest of us probably. And they spend more time outdoors. They have increased air and water intake, again, compared to their body size. And they have increased metabolism, again, comparing their body size to an adult.
And at the bottom of this section, under susceptibility factors, there's a heading that says conditions that impair ability to adapt. Can you explain what that means?
Right. It would just be things outside of the child's body itself that affects their ability to adapt. And on this list, really for Montana, the biggest thing would be displacement in extreme weather conditions.
And then below susceptibility factors, the last portion of the chart is headed fetus, infant, and child health effects. Can you explain what that means in the context of the overall chart?
Right. So all the things we just discussed on the top and middle of the chart lead to a number of health problems. Some we've already started to allude to and some we'll allude to this afternoon and maybe tomorrow, including adverse pregnancy outcomes, allergic diseases, cardiovascular disease, and skin disease. Also, heat-related illnesses, immune disorders, and infections. And if that's not enough, malnutrition and stunting, mental health effects, and metabolic and renal disease. And lastly, a few more, neurodevelopmental impairments, respiratory disease, and trauma.
So now that you've explained the chart, let's go back to the what I'm going to call the bigger chart. And can you explain essentially how the flow works?
Right. So we have these conditions that climate change is causing that then there's specific ways that kids are exposed. And then when they're exposed, we have their factors that make them more at risk than adults are. And then it produces a slew of health problems, some of which adults have, but some of which are specific to kids because they're still developing.
And Dr. Byron, are those health impacts documented in the medical literature?
They are. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of articles on climate change and human health, including specific to children.
Dr. Byron. What are the health impacts of climate change that apply to these youth plaintiffs?
Yeah, so referring back to the climate change and human health in Montana report from 2021, the biggest things that we see and will expect to see are related to air quality, which includes wildfire smoke, but also pollen and dust and wildfires themselves, and then adverse climate events, extreme climate events such as heat, flooding, drought, and extreme precipitation.
Can you please explain the health impacts caused by extreme heat and heat waves?
There's a number caused by heat and heat waves. We have, first of all, before a child's born, when the woman is exposed to heat, we have damages that can happen to the baby. So they can be born preterm or they can be born smaller than what they're supposed to be for their age. They can have congenital heart defects, and there's associations between neurodevelopmental things like ADHD and autism and decreased IQ.
Referencing exhibit P31, the Montana report on climate change and human health. How does that report tell us about heat-related illnesses in Montana?
Right. It's telling us that it's increasing the intensity and frequency of heat waves, and we're certainly seeing that. And it also notes that, especially in parts of the state where Ricky Held and my husband and I live in the eastern part of Montana, we can expect to see about 54 days a year over 90 degrees, in addition to what we're already seeing over 90 degrees by the end of the century.
Dr. Byron, can you explain heat illnesses?
Yeah, starting out with mild things like a heat rash or miliaria. You can also get muscle cramps, but you can also get heat stroke, which is frequently deadly. The liver and the kidney are also damaged by heat. And we also have worsening allergies. We have worsening asthma effects. And then we have neurodevelopmental effects, like I was just starting to talk about.
Are children at greater risk from extreme heat?
They are. Children, this particular study, the National Climate Assessment, noted that children have a higher risk of dying or becoming ill due to extreme heat. We also see in Montana from data that was acquired from our hospitals that when we looked at kids during heat waves, what we saw is that they did come in more for heat illnesses, but they also came in more for bacterial enteritis, which is an infection caused by bacteria in the stomach or intestines. It tends to be significantly more serious than viral infections. They also were in more for otitis media, which is a middle ear infection, and otitis externa, which is an external ear infection.
Does extreme heat result in respiratory problems?
Yes, it does.
Oh.
How for these plaintiffs?
First, how generally?
They just tend to have more exacerbations of especially when they already have respiratory illnesses.
And have you seen evidence of respiratory problems with these plaintiffs?
This I'm going to object to based upon hearsay. She has already testified that she has not diagnosed them or provided treatment to them, and hence the hearsay exception of 803-4 is not in effect. And so she testified to what they told her or other outside documents.
Your Honor, she's not, if I may, Your Honor, she is not offering opinion that they're suffering. The youth plaintiffs will testify what they're suffering from. She's linking what they're have testified or will testify to the medical conditions that she's describing. So she's not asserting, for example, plaintiff Olivia in this slide, she's not offering evidence that she is in fact suffering from whatever the medical condition is, saying Olivia says she's suffering from this. And based on that, this is how, this is what it means in terms of climate change and human health.
Are you meaning the impacts on a person suffering from that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, with that understanding, overruled.
Yes. Can I have a continuing objection?
Yes.
Thank you.
So, if I may, returning to the question, Dr. Byron, have you seen evidence of respiratory problems with these plaintiffs?
Yes. From the original complaint, we saw respiratory impacts in Olivia, Micah, Jeffrey, Nate, and Ruby. And because of the conversation that just occurred, that's why I have these notes with me, because they have the exact thing that it says. Complaint, just briefly. So, for example, Olivia had told us she was diagnosed with exercise at age, and that her asthma is affected by higher temperatures. And Jeffrey has pulmonary sequestration, which makes him susceptible. His brother Nate also has respiratory issues and is gone.
That's exactly what my objection is about. She could not testify as to what their out-of-court statements is. Something just has not treated them or diagnosed them. And that's kind of what she's doing.
Tell me that they're going to testify, and some of them already have testified to their condition. She's looking at the complaint. I realize we're making a bit of a jump, but I think we're trying to move through this without having to have all of them testify first, if I'm understanding this correctly.
Yes, Your Honor, and this is, again, Rule 703 of the Rules of Evidence as the basis of opinion on for experts.
As long as I have my continuing objection.
All right.
Thank you.
So
So Nate has gone to the emergency room twice for respiratory problems. And Ruby has asthma that was diagnosed in 2015 and has had multiple attacks.
What are the effects of heat on cognitive ability?
When we are within a heat wave, all of us function less well. We can't perform complex mental tasks as well. We don't do as well on tests. And when children are repeatedly exposed to heat, they've actually shown association with decreased ability to in cognitive skill development. And also we have seen from classroom data that children who are based on their ventilation or the heat in the classroom, it affects their school performance.
And what is the role of extreme heat in a child's outdoor activities?
Well, kids like to be outside more, so it puts them more at risk. And we alluded to before that they sometimes don't know the warning signs or may choose to ignore the warning signs of early heat illnesses.
Several of the plaintiffs are high school or college athletes. Does that make a difference?
It does.
How?
Well, they're more competitive and they have a lot of peer pressure. And usually athletes are the last ones that want to be the weenie and say, I'm not going to do this. It's too hot outside. So they kind of keep pushing through it. And that puts them more at risk.
Based on your understanding of the evidence, how does that apply to these plaintiffs specifically?
We have several of them that are pretty intense athletes. Can I refer to what they have said?
Yeah, the plaintiffs have referred to Rule 703. You're an expert. You relied on looking at their, I guess, some sort of complaint to formulate some opinions. To that degree, I'll let you go ahead. Sure.
Okay. So Kian, Georgie, Claire, and Grace are all pretty competitive athletes, or maybe more, but I don't know about them. And Georgiana said she's had to stop workouts because she was overheating and having headaches and dizziness. Claire, when she was in high school, played cross country and also was a cyclist. She said she had seen the asphalt melting under her bike tires. And she had had games canceled and practices canceled because of wildfire smoke or heat. And then I think I got it right.
Okay. How will extreme heat affect children jobs that require them to be outdoors?
That puts them at risk too, because often they aren't allotted time to acclimatize and they don't have protective measures.
Several plaintiffs are indigenous. Does excessive heat have a role in their lives?
It does, and let me preface my statements by saying, despite the fact that I've lived for 3 decades with Native American peoples, I would never issue my own opinions about this, so my opinions are entirely based on what the kids have said and what my colleagues who are Indigenous and friends who are Indigenous have told me. So with Lillian and Ruby, they are of the Apsalika Nation or the Crow Nation, and they attend a Crow Fair every year, like almost everybody does in Crow Agency, and they do traditional dancing, and the dancing is with the beautiful outfits like they have on now. There's a lot of leather. They weigh a lot. They're really hot, and so when the temperature is really hot at Crow Fair, it's really hard to dance and really puts you at risk for heat illnesses. In addition, there's been a lot more extreme weather in late August for the week that people are camped at Crow Fair. And it just affects your whole ability to get around. There'll be vast amounts of mud and just really extreme things like hailstorms and things that seem significantly worse to me compared to 30 years ago when we first started going to Crow Fair. And then we have Sarayel, and I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, I apologize, who's from the Confederated Salish Kootenai Tribes, and she does huckleberry picking as part of her cultural heritage, and they're finding that the seasons are changing for the huckleberries, and they have to go farther to find them, and that's really significant when you're a place-based person to see these changes in the landscape.
Can you please explain the role of excessive heat in fetal growth and development?
Yeah. When women are exposed to heat waves, and it doesn't have to be that high. Most of the studies look at temperatures above 85 or maybe 90 for 1 or 2 or 3 days during the pregnancy. They actually find that more babies are born premature. There are more stillbirths and more babies born small for gestational age. But they've also done, there's a lot of associations now showing that the neurodevelopment is affected. So we see the increased autism and lower IQs and ADHD in increased amounts.
Dr. Byron, I'd like to show you what's been marked as Exhibit P45. It's a study on increased risk for children born in 2020 versus 1960, entitled Intergenerational Inequities in Exposure to Climate Extremes. Is this one of the documents you relied upon in preparing your expert report?
Yes, it is.
Do you consider this to be a reliable study?
Yes, and it's in a peer-reviewed journal.
Does this study support your opinion that climate change about climate change injuries in terms of the risk of children born in the past 23 years?
Yes, it does.
Your Honor, I'd move Exhibit P45 into evidence.
I would object on hearsay grounds. Certainly the part that she relied upon is appropriate. I can understand that part, but the rest of the study is hearsay.
If I may, Dr. Byron, what part of this study did you rely on?
We really just have the one quote that's up on the screen. It talks about comparing the kids born in 2020 with the sizable number of us in this courtroom that were born around 1960. And what we're going to see in comparison is that those kids born in 2020 will see 2 to 7 times as many adverse climate effects during their lifetime compared to what we have experienced.
In particular, heat waves?
Heat waves is the worst one, yes.
Your Honor, then I just move that statement into evidence.
All right. That page of P45 is admitted.
Or just the statement that she just made is, I think, hits it.
Well, if I may, Your Honor, it needs a little context, and that's why I would ask for that.
I'll let the page in.
Thank you, Your Honor. And, Your Honor, I'm sorry, another thing. I was just going to ask her about the little graph on the side here, which is not on that page, but may we admit that graph?
That in the report? Is that what
you said? Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, if she wants to explain it, I guess it's what the statement says.
Sure. Well, Dr. Byron, is this the graph depicting what the statement says?
It is, but I haven't looked at it in a while, so I don't think I can explain it as well as it should be explained.
Okay. Well, then,
I think we'll just go with the page 45 and forget the graph.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
So, to put this statement in context, under current energy and climate systems, what will life be like for children born in 2020 or later?
All the data indicates that we're going to have more heat waves, increased in frequency, as well as other adverse weather effects.
Now, some plaintiffs like Grace have testified that they are concerned about having children of their own because they don't want to bring children into a dangerous world and leave their and have their childhoods be even harder. Is that a valid concern from a health perspective?
Yes. And first of all, it's a really common concern in the kids that I hear of. I hear that sort of comment all the time. Certainly the decision to have kids is very much a moral and personal decision, that I wouldn't, ascertain to, make suggestions on. But the scientific evidence is that, that the kids in the future are going to be exposed starting before they're born, and they're going to be exposed to more heat, and potentially more damage from heat than even the kids that are in the courtroom now.
So let's turn to the health impacts caused by extreme weather events. Do you have an opinion on that issue?
Yes, extreme weather events are happening and are increasing even up to present and are predicted to increase into the future. And they are affecting the health of kids, and disproportionately in comparison to adults.
And can you briefly describe what you mean by extreme weather events?
Well, extreme heat, like we've already talked about, extreme precipitation events, flooding, which we see especially with the early snow melt on top of extreme precipitation events, and droughts.
And what is the effect of extreme weather events on human health?
It depends on the event. So if we take floods, for example, floods can cause an immediate loss of life or limb, especially, again, for a population that relies on adults to help them survive or get them out of harm's way. Floods also lead to increases in waterborne illnesses. And one of the biggest things to affect the health of a family and the health of the children is economic stability. So if we have a flood that then damages property or destroys home, that can actually have a huge effect on children's health.
And based on your understanding of the event evidence, how do those extreme weather events affect these plaintiffs?
A number of them have been affected by extreme weather events.
Can you give us some examples?
Well, in relation to flooding, if we look back, we heard from Eva yesterday, and in particular, the event from 2018 that they named the tsunami of 2018 in the Livingston area, when all the rivers and streams and tributaries were flooded around their house, and the bridge was damaged and deemed unstable, so they couldn't drive a car across it. So they went through an extended period of time having to drive to the bridge, get out of the car, move their stuff, go across the bridge and take another car. And then when they ran out of gas on the far side of the river, they had to ride a bike to do that. So that's a pretty significant impact on a kid.
Please explain the health effects of drought.
Drought tends to be slower and indolent than most of the events we're talking about, associated very strongly with a sense of despair. Drought is also associated with increased waterborne illnesses, and it's also associated with increased air pollution due to the dust, especially in areas like in eastern Montana where we have a lot of agriculture. And if that's combined with wind, which we sometimes have in eastern Montana, it makes things even worse.
Based on the evidence, have drought affected these plaintiffs?
Drought has had an effect on a number of these.
Can you give us some examples?
Yeah, so Ricky on their ranch over near Broadus, they have seen that the elk and the deer come more into the interior of the ranch than they used to do. So that affects, they're competing with the cows for both food and water, and they're also destroying some of the crops. So again, you have the worry about your livelihood and your family's economic stability. And then we have a number of the plaintiffs who hunt and fish, and I'd have to look at my list to remember all of them.
That's fine.
So Lander, Badge, Sorrel, Kian, and Micah all fish. And as we heard today, some of them fish for subsistence to help with their, the food in their family. And that's been significantly impacted by the lower levels in the rivers and the bans that we sometimes have for days or afternoons against fishing. And then we have some of them that like to raft and float and do things fun outside in the summertime. And again, those activities are affected by drought. Sometimes the rivers are too low to do that. So I think Lander, Badge, Georgie, and Grace do rafting and floating. And then Talia has noticed that she's able to ice skate less in the winter and paddleboard less in the summer. So these are all things that the kids do for enjoyment and for activity that are affected.
How would you summarize the role of drought on health impacts for children in Montana?
Well, drought leads to anxiety for some of them because of especially people who are living off the land. It's affecting the ability to do subsistence fishing, and it's also just affecting our ability to have fun in the beautiful state that we live in, or they live in.
Let's turn now to air pollution. Do you have opinions about the health effect, health impacts rather, caused by air pollution in the state?
Yeah, pretty strong opinions. So first, to explain what happens with air pollution, when we breathe in air pollution, it doesn't just stay in our lungs. It actually gets across into the bloodstream. So it circulates throughout our body. We found the particles, particulate matter, both beyond the blood-brain barrier in the brain itself. We found the kidneys, and we found them on what should be the pristine side of the placenta in the womb, on the baby side of the placenta. So it's really going throughout our body. It triggers inflammatory responses, and inflammation is never good in medicine. And so it can actually trigger or worsen juvenile idiopathic arthritis and leukemia and asthma.
What's idiopathic arthritis?
Just one of the forms of arthritis that happens in children. It's an autoimmune disease.
When we're speaking about air pollution, that often causes us to think of, can you explain the prevalence of asthma among children?
Yeah, asthma is really common. About 6 million kids in America, or 1 out of 12, have asthma. And when we have asthma, it's usually set off either by having an infection, sometimes just a viral infection, or being exposed to air pollution. And that makes our airways tighten. It makes it harder to get air in and out of our lungs. So we use more medicines, and then sometimes we have to go into the emergency room or into the hospital, and it sometimes results in death.
Have you, over the course of your career, had patients who have died as a result of asthma?
I've had a number of kids who have died.
Now, do certain medical conditions increase in children born to pregnant women exposed to air pollution?
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Yes. So another kind of shocking research over the last decade or so, but when women breathe in dirty air, it affects their pregnancy. And so the kids are more likely to be born premature, to be born dead, or to be born too small from what they're supposed to be for that age. And just like heat, it does the same thing with neurodevelopment. We find that it's associated with lower IQ, with autism, and with asthma. And there's also some association with a couple kinds of cancers like astrocytoma and leukemia.
How's Montana and children in Montana affected by air pollution?
So the American Lung Association puts out a report called the State of the Air Report every year. And if we look at air quality in some of the plaintiff's counties, four counties received an F, and that was Missoula, Flathead, Lewis and Clark, and Gallatin County. And then Powder County received a D for 24-hour high particle pollution days. And 13 of our plaintiffs are from those counties. And then for the other three kids, they are from Park County and Lake County, and we don't have data on those counties.
So mostly deaths, Fs, but a D, is that correct?
Correct.
Is that, in your opinion, a good report card?
That's not a good report card.
What's been the effect of wildfire smoke, based on your understanding of the evidence, on these plaintiffs?
There's been a lot of impacts. If we look at the kids who have asthma first, again, I need to look at my notes to keep 13 kids straight.
Okay, go ahead.
We have Olivia, who says she feels like she's suffocating when she's out for more than 30 minutes in the smoke. We have Jeffrey and Nathaniel, who are kept inside, which keeps them a little more safe from the air pollution, but is also really hard on our mental health and well-being when we're that age. And even being kept inside, Nathaniel's had to go to the ER a couple times. And we have Jeffrey, who had all kinds of problems at outdoor camp with headaches and coughing and bloody nose, eye irritation, stuffy nose, sore throat, and fatigue. And then we have Ruby, who says that the lung irritation makes her want to avoid activities that require exercise.
Has wildfire smoke impacted other plaintiffs?
It has. So Badge says it's difficult to breathe. It triggers the cough. It irritates his eyes. Kian says he feels sick enough that he didn't want to do soccer and other activities. Georgie, in her cross-country training, has felt like she can't breathe, and sometimes she has to wear a mask because of ash falling out of the sky. Grace says she gets coughing and throat irritation with the wildfire smoke. And Eva, irritation, sore throats, and headaches from the smoke. And Micah got headaches and fatigue and eye irritation when he was training for a half marathon in the summer. He also was in a trail running class in 2017, and he ended up having to quit because of the air conditions. And then for Claire, she said it was a lot harder to compete train on cross country.
In your opinion, can you please explain the role of anthropogenic climate change on pollen?
Yeah, so Steve Running reminded us yesterday, or shamed us into remembering, the fact that we all learned back in 7th grade that that plants photosynthesize, and they like CO2, they absorb it, they create energy, and then they eventually spit out oxygen, which helps us. So in fact, they like this increased CO2 that we're living in over the past couple decades so much that they grow faster and grow more plants, and they produce more allergens, more pollen, if they're an allergenic plant. So the plants are producing over 2 times as much pollen as what they used to produce. And then we have a longer growing season for them. So the allergy season actually lasts for more than a year. Last National Climate Assessment 4, noted the same thing that they're expecting because of the temperature, the changes in precipitation, and the increased CO2.
Checked on this. I think A, fleeting, as I said before, it flashed up a quote, and B, I think it was non-responsive.
Sustained.
Okay. Dr. Byron, for a non-allergy sufferer like me, why does increased pollen matter?
If you really have no allergies, it doesn't matter at all for yourself. If you just have allergies and not asthma, your eyes are annoyed, your nose is running, and you tend to have headaches and sometimes more sinus infections. And in fact, Olivia, who has allergies, said that sometimes her eyes swell shut, and she her eyes are in pain for a couple weeks at a time. If you have asthma, allergies can trigger asthmatic attacks, which then, again, can cause you to use more medicines, to lose time in school and work, have to go to the ER or go to the hospital, or potentially die.
Do you have an opinion, Dr. Byron, about whether plaintiffs are being injured due to air pollution associated with anthropogenic climate change?
Sorry, repeat that, please.
Sure. Do you have an opinion about whether plaintiffs are being injured due to air pollution associated with anthropogenic climate change?
Yes, they are.
I'd like now for you to review a slide entitled Climate-Related Harms to Children's Health, This was figure two in your expert report. Can you generally walk us through what this slide depicts? And please take your time because it's got some difficult terms.
Okay, so the red arrow across the top basically shows some of the effects of climate change that we've already talked about. The ones that would be influencing Montana in particular would be storms and heat and drought and floods and air pollution, somewhat from its agents. And so those actually affect us from womb to tomb, as we would say. So if we look on the left at the fetus that's still inside of the mother, we see effects that start very early on. And we've talked about some of these with babies sometimes having intrauterine growth retardation, which means they're smaller than they're supposed to be, which has lifelong effects, being premature, being born at low birth weight, and then altering our developmental program and epigenetic changes, which we've already talked about. So if climate change events like heat and air pollution are starting with the pregnant mom, then again, you're already starting there, and then you have these problems for the rest of your life. So just below the red arrow, again, are a number of things that affect us all through our life, including the pregnant mom and the full-sized adult. So the stress, the mental health issues, the infectious issues that we see more of, and respiratory diseases, displacement issues, and heat-induced illness. That can affect us at all ages. But again, the earlier in life that all these significant changes start happening and affecting us, it affects us even more as we go through life. So down at the very bottom in the yellowish color, we see that babies and children and adults are affected by neurodevelopmental disorders and cognitive deficits, by congenital heart disease, allergies, asthma, eczema, which is a skin problem, some congenital infections, that even malignancies and schizophrenia and obesity and diabetes and heart disease all go along with climate change, finding increased numbers of people with these problems.
Dr. Byron, do you have an opinion about whether anthropogenic climate change has the potential to cause significant long-term impacts for the plaintiffs regarding their development and success in life?
It absolutely does, and I think this shows it in one picture.
So would you say that reduction of climate impacts is important?
It's important and very much necessary.
There's no foundation for them. And finally, they can attempt to cure evidentiary defects in the course of their defense case or in rebuttal. The second item, Your Honor, is that we have filed a motion regarding the expert reports. We think it's important to have that fully resolved by the end of our case in chief so we can know with some finality which documents we need to get into evidence at the end of our case in chief. So we would request the courts looking at those as soon as possible and giving the defendants a chance to reply in an expeditious manner to our point brief on that matter. It's been previously addressed, as the court's aware, in our motions in limine. So this is something that they've had a chance to address, we've had a chance to address, but we bring it back in focus. And we would ask that they be given a day to respond so that we would know by the end of our case what we have to do in terms of offering documents into evidence by that time, Your Honor.
I think we can get it done by the end of the day, 24 hours.
All right.
We have staff working on it. And, Your Honor, I don't think you have 482 documents that I asked the court to take judicial notice of. One is United States Department of Agricultural Statistics. It's a 2017 census. And the other is from the Montana State University Extension Agency, specific to Powder River County, which came into focus in Ms. Held's testimony. And, Your Honor, I cite Rule 201 because these are capable of accurate and ready determination by resort to sources whose accuracy cannot be reasonably questioned. And I think it applies under Rule 201D because it's mandatory. I also cite Martinez v. Zoom Info. It's a Ninth Circuit case where the court held that government websites are appropriate items to take judicial notice over. I also have a Second Circuit case, Wells Fargo Bank versus Wright Mills Holding. If you want the sites, I can give you the sites.
I don't think that's necessary. So I understand Mr. Sullivan's concern that these are, I mean, you got this off the internet and.
They are government websites, Your Honor, and it's relevant to the testimony that climate change has harmed the agricultural community in Powder River County, and very specific to Powder River County.
They have a number of government witnesses that they've listed next week in their case in chief, Your Honor. They can easily foundation government documents at that time and follow the appropriate protocols at that time to bring them into evidence with foundation.
All right. Well, I'll take judicial notice of Exhibits A and B.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor. With that, we're finished with the housekeeping matters.
Okay.
If for some reason that our staff is having trouble responding to that in 24 hours, we may ask for a slight extension, if that's okay.
Well, we'll do now that they're time. Very concerned about getting it, you know, responded to. So.
Okay.
Go ahead. I proceed with Dr. Byron.
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, Dr. Byron, you understand that you're still under oath, correct?
I do, thank you.
Okay, sure. And when we broke yesterday, we were about to move into a topic called Adverse Childhood Experiences, or ACEs. Can children's exposure to adverse childhood experiences cause long-term health impacts?
They can. It's been very well researched in the past 25 years. What adverse childhood experiences are, the classic ones are things like being exposed to a family member with substance abuse, or a family member in prison, or losing a parent to either death or divorce, being physically or emotionally abused yourself, witnessing abuse in your parents, those sorts of things. And what those experiences do in our childhood is it activates the normal stress response system, but it activates it in a really unhelpful, pathologic, ongoing fashion that then leads to significant harm.
Dr. Byron, can you briefly explain how ACEs, or the idea of adverse childhood experiences, was discovered?
Yeah, so it was discovered by an internal medicine doctor back in the 1990s, working for Kaiser Permanente. So he was taking care of people with a good income and really good health insurance in California. And he sort of stumbled into the fact that a lot of the people with chronic medical conditions had significant trauma during their childhood. And then they started researching, because they had a huge database of patients there. And he was first totally discredited. Nobody believed him. But there's been tons of research done since then showing that exposure to these things that create fear and anxiety in children actually lead to pretty severe consequences sometimes. I might add that during that time, he kind of then picked the things that people were telling him, those traumatic events like what I just listed. But you'll note that in that list, there wasn't anything about war, probably because war wasn't happening in California at that time. But there's no question that exposure to war is a huge adverse childhood experience. There was also no people complaining about climate change at that time. But 25, 30 years ago, we just weren't having severe effects like we see today.
And Your Honor, I've displayed a slide that's a chart from Exhibit P44, a paper entitled Prevention adverse childhood experiences, ACEs, and leveraging the best available evidence from 2019. And, Your Honor, I'm not moving in the paper, but because I'm going to have Dr. Byron go through the chart, I'd ask the court to admit in evidence the chart that's from that paper.
Did she, I mean, is this reasonably relied upon in her opinions or formulated in her opinions?
I can ask her that, but
I think that's the foundation for it.
Sure, sure. Dr. Byron, this chart and the paper, is that a report that you relied on in preparing your expert report?
It is.
And is the study reliable?
It is. It's from the Center for Disease Control.
Your Honor, I move it.
E44?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is admitted. That page you're talking about.
Thank you, Your Honor. So, Dr. Byron, taking these figures one at a time, starting with adverse childhood experiences, can you please walk the court through the progression of this chart?
Right. So when we experience adverse childhood experiences, things that give prolonged fear or anxiety or stress to our bodies, it can set off what's called disrupted neurodevelopment. And that concept is constantly being researched, because exactly what's happening, we don't really know. But that leads to social, emotional, and cognitive impairments. Kennedy to them, which can then lead to adoption of unhealthy risk behaviors. And that in turn leads to impacts on our life potential, which can lead to disease, disability, and social problems, and then can cause early death.
And Dr. Byron, what are examples of childhood conditions that trigger ACEs?
Anything that leads to increased or prolonged fear and anxiety, like the conditions that we just mentioned. And if we take an example, a really common one is atherosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries that leads to heart disease. So when people are have experienced these adverse childhood experiences, they're more likely to start laying down plaque in their arteries when they're very, very young. And autopsy studies have shown that this happens when you're very young. It can happen. And it goes on for decades. And so then you might have a heart attack when you're 45 years old, and yet it might have started when you were 5. And so this is the way these stresses affect our bodies. And the same with a significant stress from adverse weather events, from the wildfire smoke, it can set off this same cascade.
And based on your understanding of the evidence, how do ACEs apply to these plaintiffs?
They've all undergone, I mean, I think we've all heard in court the significant angst that they have felt in their lives. And that has the potential to be an adverse childhood event. These kids have experienced a kind of a new term where we talk about soulistalgia, which is the idea that you've lost your home even when you're still living in your home, and home is bigger than your house. I also understand that Lisa Van Susteren will be testifying later on mental health impacts, and we'll go into more detail on these things.
And Dr. Byron, do more ACEs cause more risk?
Absolutely.
So we have here another chart from the same study, and it's, again, from that same report, Exhibit P44, Your Honor. And I'd ask again, just from Exhibit P44, for the chart that we're displaying called ACEs Can Have Lasting Effects, to be admitted into evidence.
I don't have any objection, Your Honor, to this chart, not the study.
All right. So this chart from P44 is also.
Thank you, Your Honor. Okay, Dr. Byron, we have a chart. It's got a left side. It's got a right side. Let's start first with the left side. And the chart is headed, ACEs Can Have Lasting Effects On. Can you briefly walk us through the left-hand side of the chart?
The left hand?
Yes.
Okay. So health impacts from these adverse childhood experiences include a multitude of issues like obesity and diabetes, heart disease, depression, suicidality, strokes and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, broken bones. It also includes behavioral changes, which includes increased predisposition to smoking and alcoholism and drug use. And it also affects life potential, including graduation rates, academic achievement, and lost time from work.
And Dr. Byron, I forgot to ask you, is this chart from the CDC?
It is. This is the same CDC report.
Okay. And then the right-hand side of the chart, it has a heading on the vertical axis, risk for negative health and well-being outcomes, and then at the bottom, number of ACEs. Can you explain that to us?
Right. So there's a direct proportionality between the number of adverse childhood experiences you have and your risk of experiencing significant long-term chronic medical problems.
Dr. Byron, in your opinion, is it important to prevent ACEs?
Absolutely.
And is scientific research that supports your opinion on the importance of preventing ACEs?
There is, and there's dozens and dozens of institutes and centers across the country now that work on just that, including a couple in Montana.
Can you please explain how children's exposure to climate impacts can cause long-term cognitive, behavioral, and mental health impacts, inhibiting learning and long-term success?
Well, again, if we have, if a child experiences chronic fear or anxiety or ongoing fear or anxiety from any situation in their life, it can set off this unhealthy, toxic stress situation, which can lead to all the various problems that are on the left hand of this chart.
Well, let's take wildfires. How can experiencing wildfires have a role in causing stress for these plants?
Because wildfires are giving, for some situations, they're giving fear that you're going to have to evacuate or leave your home or lose your home, lose everything that you've known from your childhood. And then we have the smoke that creates a pall over your entire life for the time being and affects the things we're able to do, the meaningful activities, just our ability to be a happy human being.
And what, in terms of your medical opinion, is the effects of changes in plans?
Changes in plans are hugely disruptive to kids. So again, when family vacations are canceled, when you're stuck having to be inside because your parents are worried about your health when you're outside, all of those things are really difficult for a child. They just can't quite understand, especially the younger children.
Can you provide your opinion on the effects of air pollution on a child's IQ?
Outdoor air pollution has been shown to be associated with lower IQ. Also been shown to affect behavioral and cognitive issues.
We had a prior slide, Dr. Byron, where some plaintiffs live in counties with a grade of an F or a grade of a D. You remember that slide?
I do.
And could that affect the plaintiff's IQ?
Well, it's concerning. Air pollution is like lead. No level is a safe level.
Are there studies on this effect, Dr. Byron?
There are lots of studies. And the picture up on the slide right now was a review study. So that's amassing the data from a whole bunch of studies into one. So you have a larger data set. Van Nieuwenhuizen, and just last year, and he noted that climate change affects child and adolescent mental health in many ways, including as a social and ecological determinant of health. It serves as a threat amplifier and as a source of trauma and distress. Single extreme weather events contribute to significant mental health problems, but subacute and chronic also have mental health sequelae. And there are many, many studies that confirm this. And when you look specifically at adverse weather events, there's been a great data showing that kids suffer significant increases in depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, attachment disorder, substance abuse.
Based on your understanding of the evidence, have the plaintiffs in this case experienced such weather events?
I believe they have. If we look at Ricky with the stress of whether or not their farm and ranch operation is going to be economically viable, whether her livestock and animals that she loves are going to be killed by wildfire, that's really traumatic. When we look at Sarah Yell and the disruption to cultural, traditional values of her indigenous heritage, and we look at Lillian Rubian, who see the disruptions to their cultural heritage in Crow Agency affecting their ability to enjoy the most eventful time of the year for the Opsahlika people.
Now, how do the restrictions on a child as a result of anthropogenic climate change affect a child's health?
Can you repeat that? Sorry.
Sure. How do the restrictions on a child as a result of having to stay home, et cetera, as a result of anthropogenic climate change affect a child's health?
Again, restrictions are just really unreasonable and unexpected restrictions are just really hard on kids, not being able to enjoy their life. And that's hard.
In your opinion, when it comes to climate change, are mental health and physical health related?
Mental health and physical health are always related. So when we see these mental health and physical health impacts on these kids, it's affecting their overall well-being and ability to live a happy and fruitful life.
Dr. Byron, do you have an opinion about whether prompt climate change mitigation strategies are necessary to protect children against climate harms and dangers to their health?
Prompt mitigation strategies are necessary, and in fact, they're the only thing to start preventing these harms.
Can you give me an analogy from another pollution source demonstrating why prevention is important?
Sure. If we look at lead, most people have heard about lead. There's no safe level of lead. So many years ago, people started, well, first of all, you can treat a child that comes in with lead poisoning, but if they have lead poisoning, it's already damaged their brain. So we can get them back to being as healthy as possible, but the damage is already done. So the way to treat that is to prevent it. So what people started doing was getting lead out of gasoline and working to get lead out of pipes and water. We've all heard about the issues with lead. And the same thing happens with climate change. The only way to really prevent these issues is to work on getting rid of what's causing these issues.
Do you have a term for this in the medical field?
Yes, this is called primary prevention, which is preventing exposure to hazards that cause disease and injury. It's kind of the underpinning of public health.
Should primary prevention, in your opinion, be a primary priority? In other words, does it go to your earlier testimony about prevention being better than treatment?
Right. Prevention's better than treatment. It's almost always substantially cheaper than treatment and almost always better on the patient.
And in your opinion, is it sufficient simply to treat the health harms after they've arisen?
Well, we're stuck having to treat harms that happen because they weren't prevented, and that's what we do in the emergency room all the time. But what you want to do is to prevent them to begin with.
Dr. Byron, we've heard testimony that in March of this year, the IPCC issued a new summary for policymakers. How does this IPCC report affect your opinions?
The sixth IPCC just corroborates everything that we've already talked about today. And even though this is one of those 2,000-page articles that's an overview of everything related to climate change, there are some particularly poignant comments about human health.
Can you, Dr. Byron, give me some examples? And I'm not asking you necessarily to read the quotes that are displayed. You can paraphrase them, but tie them into your expert testimony, please.
Okay. So, part of the IPCC notes that everywhere in the world, and that includes Montana, is projected to face further increases in climate hazards. It notes that there's increasing multiple risks to human beings. And it notes that hazards and risks that we are experiencing now include things like human mortality and morbidity, which we've already talked about. That's injury. That's death and injury. And also increases in foodborne, waterborne, and vector-borne diseases.
And Dr. Byron, we see terms in here, and we've had Dr. Running testify about medium, high confidence, et cetera. In your understanding, what does very high confidence mean?
99%+ of the scientists with expertise agree with that opinion. So that includes the one saying, including multiple risks to humans.
I'd like to show another quote from that IPCC sixth assessment report. And Dr. Byron, can you again do the same thing? Quote or paraphrase, and then relate it to your opinions in this case.
Right. So over 99% of these scientists with expertise chosen from their countries around the world for being experts say that climate change is a threat to human well-being and planetary health. They also note that there is a rapidly closing window of opportunity to secure a livable and sustainable future for all, which is the total underpinning of this lawsuit.
I'd like to show another quote, Dr. Byron, again from the IPCC sixth assessment report. And can you please do the same thing, relate the quote to your, paraphrase the quote, what's on the slide, and then relate it to your medical opinion.
So without meaningful, very quick action that also is equitable, that that improves things for all people. Without these kind of actions on climate change is going to just increasingly worsen our livelihoods, our health, and our well-being, both of all of us in this courtroom and all the ones that these plaintiffs decide to bring into the world later.
And the final quote from the IPCC sixth assessment report that I'd like to display. Can you, again, paraphrase or state the quote and then relate it to your medical opinions?
So first of all, co-benefits are a huge issue in the health and climate world. Co-benefits are things that when we take action against climate change, that's actually going to turn around and also help human health. And we have one of the world experts in that topic sitting in the courtroom right now. So if we do quick climate action, there are many, many co-benefits, and that includes when we look at things like lowering air pollution, that improves human health. When we look at active mobility, which includes walking and cycling, but also increases in public transportation and shared transportation, that actually has significant human health benefits that are well documented in peer-reviewed literature. And when we shift to sustainable, healthy diets, again, really helps the human being and also helps the planet and our atmosphere.
Dr. Byron, as part of your work in this case, did you become familiar with the Montana Energy Policy Act?
I'm aware of the Montana Energy Policy Act and also aware that it was repealed in our legislative session this year.
And does the repeal of the Montana Energy Policy Act have any effect on your opinions in this case?
I'm going to object. Is this area being moot pursuant to this court's order?
Well, I don't know that you've gotten to a point with her yet. I'm overruled for the moment.
Thank you. Do you want me to restate the question?
Please.
Sure. Does the repeal of the Montana Energy Policy Act have any effects on your opinions in this case?
It does not.
If climate change inducing conduct continues in the state of Montana, will that reduce the health harms for these young plaintiffs?
repeat that, please?
Sure. In your opinion, if the climate change inducing conduct that currently exists in Montana continues, will it reduce the health harms to these young plaintiffs?
It will do exactly the opposite.
Now, is that your opinion, or is it also based on peer-reviewed studies?
That's based on many, many peer-reviewed studies. The only way to tackle climate change and attack its and improve its effects on human health is to work to lessen our greenhouse gas emissions.
And is it your opinion, Dr. Byron, that actions taken by Montana's government to prevent further contributions to climate change will have significant health benefits for these youth plaintiffs?
Yes, it will have significant health benefits. And just the knowledge, again, that the adults who are over these kids' lives are concerned about protecting these kids' lives, that itself will also have enormous benefit.
And would it be possible, in your opinion, Dr. Byron, for the defendants to analyze in their environmental reviews under MEPA the harms to human health that are occurring in Montana through their permitting, leasing, and licensing of fossil fuel infrastructure and development, which lead to greenhouse gas emissions?
I'm going to object. I think it calls for a legal conclusion. I think there's also a foundation problem. I don't think she can testify to this area.
Yeah, can you lay more of a foundation?
Sure, certainly. Dr. Byron, the health effects that you've been talking about, are they possible to be analyzed in deciding whether or not to issue a permit?
This is done all around the world, all around the United States, in many municipalities and states, has been done for many years, and it's very doable for Montanans also.
Dr. Byron, we have a slide displaying a quote that says, climate change is the greatest threat to global public health. What's the basis for that quote?
Yeah. Foundation?
Well, I guess maybe she needs to just identify it, lay the foundation.
Sure, certainly. That's what Dr. Byron, are you familiar with this quote?
I am familiar with this quote. It's been out there for a few years. It started with the Lancet Commission. And, last year, an extraordinary event took place in the medical world, although most of you probably haven't heard of it, but 230 editors of 230 major, medical peer-reviewed journals around the world on the same day produced an editorial. The same editorial was published in all of their medical journals on climate change and health. And they used this quote, which again has been around for several years, that climate change is the greatest threat to global public health.
And was that unprecedented?
That is totally unprecedented. It's never happened in the history of scientific medical journals. Sorry, not scientific. They're scientific, but a different kind.
Dr. Byron, could you provide the court with a summary of your opinions in this case?
Yeah, so I believe that the health and well-being of these Montana plaintiffs, both now and in the future, is being put at risk by our overemphasis of our fossil fuel energy system. And that's based on hearing them over the last couple of days, reading their complaints, seeing their medical records, and just a background knowledge of the climate and health world, as well as being a older physician. I feel that their health is already being harmed by the global temperature increases that are causing all these effects that we've talked about. And like all forms of public health, simply treating the problem is not appropriate. We can treat the single asthmatic that comes in because of wildfire smoke. We can treat the child who's born with a birth defect or born premature because the mom was exposed. We can give therapy to the child who's traumatized by significant events. But the real intervention is primary prevention, which is working actively in good faith to lower our greenhouse gas emissions.
Thank you, Dr. Byron. Your Honor, I have no further questions at this time.
Thank you. Cross?
Fiona, is it okay if I do my cross right here? It's kind of confining, and I don't want to
Okay.
Create any issues. Dr. Byron, assuming that Montana has decreased its greenhouse gas emissions from 2005 to the present, you would agree with me that's the type of conduct that you're asking the government to do, correct?
Yes and no. What's happened in the last 18 years has been a very slow reduction. And again, that's just measuring greenhouse gas emissions. It's not measuring what happens in many other sectors.
But you would agree that's what you're asking the government to do, the state of Montana, is reduce the greenhouse gas emissions.
In a much more rapid fashion.
And you'd also agree that it's a very complicated issue.
It is a complicated issue. And the great thing, because it's complicated, is that there are many, many, many solutions.
And you also agree that it's complicated because, take, for instance, the agricultural economy, which is huge in Montana, they don't have the ability to purchase EV tractors. That makes it very complicated, doesn't it?
I would disagree with that statement.
You think that, should you have any information that agricultural producers can purchase EV tractors today?
Well, they have been created. There's the emission from their tractors is only a very small percentage of what the I'm not an expert in this, but that's only a very small percentage of what the ag industry contributes to greenhouse gases.
I understand, but it's also the owning cattle. Correct? Is another source of greenhouse gases?
Cattle are, yes.
And that's their livelihood, including right. Ms. Held, or was Ms. Held's livelihood.
Right. And there's, you know, great things we can do to help cattle emit less methane.
Okay.
And still keep our cattle.
And that costs money, all of those things.
I'm aware of a number of ranchers who do regenerative ranching. I've been on their ranches here in Montana, and they're actually producing more cows per acre and getting more hay per acre than their neighbors are in traditional forms of farming, and it's not costing them more. In fact, they're making more income.
But purchasing an EV tractor, a brand new one, would cost additional money, wouldn't it?
I don't know. The prices of tractors are pretty extraordinary already.
Let's go this way. You would agree with me that the solution to greenhouse gas emission is a global problem, correct?
Is a
global problem.
It's a global, national and local problem.
And that's why, but it is a global problem, isn't it?
Yes.
Thank you. You would agree with me that is the reason you're going to Mongolia to speak about the topic, correct?
Yes, it's cross-cultural education.
Yep.
And they have a similar ecosystem to Montana.
And Dr. Byron, I appreciated your answer to the question with regard to these individual plaintiffs concerning adverse childhood experiences. You testified, would you agree that there's potential that they have adverse childhood experiences?
Correct.
Because you haven't examined them for that. Is that correct?
I am an expert witness in this case, which generally means you haven't done the examination of the people you're talking about.
Correct. Thank you. And you'd also agree that you have not examined and or diagnosed any of the named plaintiffs for climate change cardiac issues, correct?
The role of an expert witness is not to examine the plaintiffs.
So the answer is yes.
I have not examined these plaintiffs for cardiac issues.
That were caused by climate change, correct?
That were caused by climate change or anything, yes.
Thank you. And you haven't examined them for climate change gastrointestinal diseases either, have you?
As an expert witness, I'm not to be examining patients. That's not my role.
So the answer is yes.
Repeat the question, please.
You would agree with me that you have not examined any of these individual plaintiffs for climate change gastrointestinal diseases.
I have not examined any of these plaintiffs for gastrointestinal diseases.
Or vector-borne diseases.
I have not examined these plaintiffs for vector-borne diseases.
Or heat stroke issues.
I have not examined these patients in time of potential heat stroke.
Okay. Or respiratory issues, correct?
Yes, I have not on these patients.
Okay, so you don't know whether any of these individual plaintiffs are suffering from climate change adverse effects that we've just gone through, and I can go through them again, cardiac, gastrointestinal, vector-borne, heat stress, et cetera, correct?
No, I would disagree with that statement.
Okay, so I've heard of asthma from some of these individual plaintiffs, correct?
Correct.
And that would be a respiratory disease, correct?
That's one of them, yes.
Okay, but asthma can be caused by many other factors, correct?
It can be caused and precipitated by air pollution and many other factors.
Yes, but it also can be exercise-induced, correct?
Yes, which is also worse during wildfire smoke.
I understand. But you have not diagnosed any of these plaintiffs with climate change health issues, as you testified, correct?
I have not diagnosed any of these patients.
And would you also agree with me that life expectancy has been steadily increasing from 1860 to 2020?
I'm quite sure that's correct.
Okay. And would you agree with me that in a large part for that increase in life expectancy is due to the decrease in child mortality rates?
There are many, many, many factors that go into life expectancy, which fortunately have been generally increasing through the years, although that's not true the last couple of years. And certainly decrease in childhood mortality is one of those.
So the answer is yes.
Yes.
Thank you. And I want you to testify to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty. Would you agree that you cannot point to any specific act by Montana that standing alone has caused the climate change health effects to any of Montana's children? Want me to repeat the question?
Thank you. Yes.
Would you agree that you cannot point to any specific act by Montana that standing alone caused the climate change health effects to any of Montana's children?
I would disagree with that statement.
What specific act can you point to by Montana that has caused, for instance, climate change-induced cardiac issues in a child?
I would argue that any action that we take that increases fossil fuel consumption and increases greenhouse gases is contributing to all of the morbidity and mortality that we see from climate change.
That's not my question, ma'am. I'm sorry. Maybe I didn't make it clear, and it can be on me. I want to know what specific act by Montana has caused climate change-induced cardiac issues in Montana's children. A specific act.
Senate Bill 228, Senate Bill 208, there is a lot of them this year.
Okay.
Actions by the Public Service Commission.
Tell me how that has caused a cardiac issue in a Montana child.
Objection, Your Honor, I don't believe the witness was finished with examples of specific acts. And what's interrupted?
I'll let her answer.
Okay, that's fair. I'm trying to be...
I understand.
Tell me how that Senate Bill 280 and what was the other one?
228 and 208.
Have specifically caused a cardiac issue in a Montana child.
It has perpetuated and increase the amount of greenhouse gases that is causing all of these effects.
So it is your testimony that the passage of an act which just got signed, I believe in May, has caused a specific cardiac issue in a Montana child?
Causality is difficult. It is contributing to the 100, 200,000 deaths that we see in the United States every year.
What specific child has had cardiac issues as a result of Senate Bill 280 and the other Senate bill that was just passed in May of 2023?
Again, causality is not possible to determine in many public health situations.
Understood. So you can't name a specific child.
I cannot name a specific child.
Same with the gastrointestinal disease, correct? Cannot name a specific child.
That would be against HIPAA.
I understand, but you could not give me the initials of a specific child, could you?
That would also be against HIPAA, but not today.
Okay. And you can't give me the name of a specific child that has suffered from a vector-borne disease as a result of Senate Bill 280 and the other Senate bill.
I can give examples of people who have suffered from vector-borne diseases that are related to the increased risk from increased greenhouse gases.
I'm sorry. The network went down, so the Zoom's down.
Oh, but you're still okay.
Still recording. I'm just
okay.
Letting
sorry, up. Now. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I didn't know what was going on there. Go ahead.
I'm talking about a specific Montana child who is suffering from a vector-borne disease as a result of Senate Bill 280 and the other Senate bill that you have testified is a specific act.
The majority of preventative health situations, of which 75% of our illnesses and medical problems in America are preventable, are caused by a multitude of factors that lead to increased risks. And that's the best we can do with current medical science research.
I understand that and appreciate that, but the answer is you can't name a specific child, correct? Montana child.
I am aware of children who have suffered the impacts that have, whose risks have been increased because of greenhouse gases.
But the question I asked was specific act, and you named two, the passage of two Senate bills that just got signed into law. And this is very important. You would agree that you cannot name a specific Montana child who has suffered from a vector-borne disease as a result of those two Senate bills.
Again, I don't think that this is something that could be answered with a yes or no.
So you don't know?
I have made my response that, and I don't think it can be made with a yes or no.
And you would agree with me that you cannot name a specific Montana child who has suffered a climate change death as a result of the two specific acts you fight about, correct?
Your Honor, these questions have all been asked and answered, and she said she can't identify a specific child. And he's asking essentially the same question again.
All right.
If they
just an answered, this is not a tort claim. Either.
I understand that, but I've read.
Well, Mr. Johnson, you've made your point.
Okay, thank you. I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Redirect?
Yes, Your Honor. Dr. Byron, do Montana's past and ongoing actions to permit fossil fuel activities increase health risks for Montana's youth?
Absolutely.
And would that apply, Montana's past ongoing actions to permit fossil fuel activities in terms of increasing health risks for these 16 plaintiffs?
That would apply to these 16 plaintiffs, yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. No further questions.
Just one quick follow-up. You would agree that that would apply to all Montana children?
Can you?
With regard to the health risks that apply.
Yeah, I need you to give me a whole question, though.
Sure. With regard to the health risks that you testified about, you would agree that applies to all Montana children, not just the 16 named plaintiffs?
That all Montana children are at risk from
yes.
Greenhouse gas emissions?
Yes.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further?
Nothing, Your Honor.
This witness may be excused?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. You are excused.
Thank you.